From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 20th day of April, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We'll check the cash grain markets with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Hear all about the weather forecast from Mike Tenorum at T-Storm in Chicago, and I'll tell you a bit about putting cows, especially bred cows, out on those lush green pastures this spring, any spring, in fact, and the best way maybe to help make sure that that first time they're AI'd, they actually take. And that all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker is here. He's from Waco, Texas, and Zwicker Consulting. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Todd.
Tell me about this drop in the wheat market and the influence it had on the other two grains, corn and soybeans.
Well, there's just really nothing to hang your hat on in the grain complex at the moment. Planters are rolling. Crop prospects look big in South America. Weekly export sales were generally disappointing. And this is the time of year when you're planting the crop. It just almost impossible to find any reason why an end user would come up and kind of buy the market. The market needs something other than what it's been trading on, and it's been trading on basically is, you know, big U.S. crop prospects, big South American crop prospects, and the only thing really out there that can change the complexion of the market is that there's going to be some weather adversities, and it's too early to have weather adversities unless you get into a real extreme type situation. There's a couple of rabbits I think to be pulled out of the hat on in the near term as far as maybe a weather adversity or two, and that is this cold snap that's going to come in next weekend around late April, early May. How cold, how far south that goes, that could maybe stir up the wheat market. It may also help stir up the corn and soybean market. And then usually weather patterns come in about every 3 weeks. Then you get another shot of cold air coming in around May 21st. So those are the two things that I think a couple rabbits that are in the hat. The reason I say that is because of low sunspot activity. Sunspot activity is totally fallen off the cliff. So we kind of got sunspot activity similar to kind of what we had in 2007. And in 2007, we did have a 1st of May type frost freeze in the northern third of the Corn Belt. So that's one thing. The other thing is that the overall trend of the dollar does look like it's in decline through most of 17 here. And if that is the case, that could be a supportive influence to commodities, as it could keep us competitive anyway in the export market. But just raw supply-demand fundamentals, when you look at balance sheet projections, it's just very difficult to find any reason to be bullish the ag complex, at least at the moment.
I'm going to suspect that most producers at 950 November beans and 382 December corn, while not happy, aren't terribly worried as long as they don't believe there to be much downside risk. I don't think they think that's the case either at this point. What is your opinion?
Well, my observation over the years of watching commodity markets, the markets always go lower than what you think they will, and they will always go higher than what you think they will, because once a trend develops, the trade, it just goes to the extreme. I think probably in the near term, there's probably not a whole lot of downside risk, but if we go ahead and get this crop planted, I think there is some weather wetness that may keep things slow for a while. So the trade's really not going to worry about planting delays. I mean, the only time you really begin to lose acres is if the planting delays continue on into around, you know, May 20 or so. Now, what I would say, though, if this spring does continue to stay wet, that does, I think, increase the chances that we probably will, the acreages won't grow in the June report. And if anything, maybe the acreage levels would shrink. But those, it's just a little early to talk about that because we're still in the month of April here. Anytime you're looking at the carryover projections that we're looking at, if we do have a favorable crop, we grow trend line type yields, the supplies are going to be so burdensome. We're going to be back to kind of where we were in the mid 80s and no way to climb our way out of it. So I do think there is downside risk. One of the reasons why the market probably hasn't drifted as low as some would have thought by now is the high income levels that we experienced in the double O's allowed farmers to build basically mini elevators on their farm. So farm storage is highly overbuilt. That allows farmers to keep inventory off the grain. It keeps a more orderly flow. So you don't go to those extreme levels. But if we would have another record crop this year, those grain bins will be full and the elevators will be full. So it's hard to say, but there is downside risk. I'm not sure there's so much risk maybe in the futures. I think a big crop would really open the gates for some extremely wide basis levels. That's if we go ahead and raise the crop. But that's not going to happen until you get further down the road. We haven't even got the crop planted yet. But that's one risk that I probably see as we go down the road.
Thank you so much for taking the time with me today.
Very well.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Well, in today's agricultural news, it turns out Sonny Perdue wants the USDA to continue promoting organic and local foods, put in place a trade undersecretary, and give school districts more power over decisions on students' meals. A review of 120 questions and answers for the record from 10 Senate Agriculture Committee members obtained by Politico shows that the former Georgia governor thinks the jury's still out on whether humans are causing climate change, will prioritize reducing paperwork and regulatory burdens, and improve coordination with other agencies, along with supporting big tent approaches to agriculture. But details were a bit scarce on his plans for pending issues before the department, particularly gypsum. On that note, Perdue plans to get started quickly once he's confirmed, and that won't happen until next week. He's told Senators Patrick Leahy, a Democrat of Vermont, and Kirsten Gillibrand, a Democrat from New York, that he would pay their states a visit if confirmed. Add that to the promises he made to visit Montana, South South Dakota and Colorado during his confirmation hearing, and he'll have a busy travel schedule to look forward to once taking office. Purdue, of course, will have to deal with the USDA budget cuts put forth by the Trump administration. Purdue's plan to rely on President Donald Trump's potential infrastructure overhaul to recoup cuts to USDA's rural programs, which the White House outlined in its skinny budget, sticks out among the policy discussion. Purdue wasn't part of a budget negotiation, but has repeatedly promised to protect USDA where he can. Based on his answers to the questions we talked about earlier, it seems part of that strategy is pushing issues like rural water system funding and broadband infrastructures as priorities. On the subject of Donald Trump, at a recent stop in Wisconsin to discuss job creation, Trump vowed to support Wisconsin dairy farmers in their trade dispute with Canada and possibly make big changes to the North American Free Trade Agreement. A MilkBusiness.com article quotes the president as saying, "We're using every tool at our disposal to restore the American dream. We're going to stand up for Wisconsin dairy farmers." A recent letter from Wisconsin officials to Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross noted that Canada's new targeted milk pricing programs have made it very difficult for Wisconsin dairy producers to get their product into the Canadian market. We'll stay with trade, but go across the planet, where Vice President Mike Pence was in Tokyo on Tuesday calling for stronger and more balanced bilateral trade relations with countries like Japan and South Korea. A Washington Post article says his comments raise the prospect of trade talks with Japan. Japan and the U.S. seem to have different ideas on how to take their trading relationship forward. President Donald Trump immediately withdrew the U.S. from the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement on his first day in office. In the meantime, Tokyo is looking to revive the TPP without the United States. And finally today, Mexico is looking to establish closer ties with other Latin American and South American countries. Reuters says Mexico expects to finish a new trade agreement with Argentina by the end of this year as it continues to try to diversify its trading partners. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. During the winter season, most cattle are supplemented with dry forages, grains, and co-products. This ration is balanced, and it's delivered to the cattle. Then spring comes along, and cattle are put out to grass. While green grass solves a lot of problems associated with winter feeding, manure, pen maintenance, calf health, and labor demands, it can pose nutritional challenges, especially for newly bred cows. That lush green forage has three major challenges when it comes to meeting cattle nutritional requirements. It can lack enough dry matter, it is high in protein, but the excess can become a problem without the dry matter, and it's low in fiber. Well, the beef cattle specialist at the University of Illinois wondered if this combination of problems has taken a hand in some of the lower artificial insemination conception rates they've seen in one of the three campus herds. A herd animal scientist, Dan Shike, says is very well managed, always in good condition, and thought to be, well, right.
And yeah, we were seeing our lowest AI conception rates in a few years in a row, and just, you know, couldn't get our head wrapped around what the deal was, because we thought, you know, a lot of the traditional things that you would first look at, we were really doing okay on, and we started to think about, well, we should consider the nutrition after breeding as well, and realize that at this particular herd, for a few years in a row there, our turnout to spring grass was really coinciding with our time of breeding, and we started to maybe point a finger there and see if that's where our concerns maybe were.
Well, Shike and Extension beef educator Travis Mateer set up an experiment to find out. Low dry matter and excess protein has been well documented by the dairy industry as a detriment to reproductive performance. The two wanted to know if a supplemental dry matter feedstock would make a difference. It did.
We just had two treatments. We had our control group that was grazing, and then we had this supplemented group where we fed this 4 pounds of this mix, and we started about 10 days prior to breeding at turnout, and then we carried it through for about 6 weeks after breeding there, and you know, we looked at their body weight, body condition, but ultimately we were interested in that first service AI conception rate. We did a synchronized timed AI, and so they were all cows were AI, and at that first break check, we had about 58% of the supplemented cows were pregnant to AI, and 46% of the non-supplemented cows were pregnant to AI.
Well, a 12% increase is significant. However, Scheich cautions he has just 2 years worth of data to support the findings. Scheich and Mateer did a Facebook Live video discussing lush spring grasses and the impact on cattle going to pasture that includes more details on the conception rate work. Search Facebook for University of Illinois Beef Cattle Extension. I'm Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. We're joined by Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. You on the tractor today?
Yes, I am. Planting corn. We've got another day or two of corn planting, so we're actually planting corn and some beans today.
Oh, did you just start beans today, or have you been doing that for a couple of days, too?
Well, we just got started last night, so we're just kind of getting into it, but I don't know. As good as the weather is, we figured we may as well get done what we can while the weather holds.
I know that I have made several trips to the south towards Mattoon area, which is where you are, and a lot more farmers are moving there than they are here, though they have started to pick up about yesterday afternoon more often than not. One of the things I think I made note just by looking at the ground is it sure looks like it's mellow and in really good condition. Is that really the case?
Yeah, I'd say the ground's in fantastic shape. You know, I think right in our part of the world, we've been fairly lucky with most of these rains. It seems like we've been on the shy side as far as the totals, so hopefully that trend will change once we get the crop in the ground, but it sure has been nice to date. So we're in good shape. You know, there's a couple of guys I know that are done planting corn, but a lot of folks are, you know, in the home stretch. So I think people are a pretty good situation in this part of the world.
On the other hand, if they were watching the screens in Chicago, they were probably pretty unhappy today, I would think.
I can't imagine they wouldn't be. It's been a rough week. You know, I think after last week, people had hope that, you know, I think what everyone was hoping for in farm country is that they would be dry and everyone else would be wet and the markets would rally. But unfortunately, it looks like the forecasts have turned dry enough that the trade feels pretty comfortable with where we're at. And so, you know, I don't want to get super bearish at this point, even though we've definitely violated some of our technical support. I do think essentially you're going to heighten the ability for the market to really have a nice weather rally unless we're able to plant a whole lot more corn this spring, which I don't think that that's going to happen at this point.
Have you thought about changing or lowering any of the targets on your next set of sales yet?
No, I really haven't at this point. I think that, you know, we originally were selling a lot of corn on straight hedge around that $4 mark, and then we were going to cover some of those sales. At this point, you know, I'm not so sure that we won't be a little more excited about selling whenever we're a dime lower on our next increment, especially if the planting phase is brisk this week and we get most of the crop in the ground before May 1, because I think that's what the trade's really looking at is can we get in the ground before May 1? If we can, you know, for the most part in the Midwest, we're probably looking at chance to have a decent crop.
Well, thanks for being with us. Good luck and stay safe out there on the tractor, okay?
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds from Windsor, Illinois. This is the closing market report for a Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Mike, it was a beautiful day here, and we went into the 80s, but I hear you're a little colder up there.
Well, when you get a wind off the lake, it can be pretty nasty, and temperatures were only in the low 40s yesterday evening. So while I was enjoying the cold weather from the inside, I was looking at how nice it was in Champaign and missing my days there, seeing it was 82 degrees at the same time.
Let's talk a little bit about what the weather's been like for farmers, because there is a difference between the southern and northern parts of the Corn Belt.
Well, there was a lot of rain in the northern Corn Belt overnight. Around 0.5 inch to 1.5 inches fell to the north of Interstate 80. So that area is going to need to dry out a little bit before planting can start or resume. As we go forward, though, the main area of rain will be across the southern Corn Belt. We'll see a few showers and thunderstorms this afternoon and tonight across the southeast third of the Corn Belt, primarily from around Champaign onto the south and to the east. But then the main event occurs tomorrow and Saturday when a slug of heavy rain develops from Kansas through the southern third of the Corn Belt and the northern third of the Delta. So conditions are going to slow down before they speed up, at least across the southern Corn Belt, because of that rain coming up.
What do you see next week?
Next week's a little bit difficult to pinpoint just because we have a number of things that will take place. But it is fairly obvious that a major system is going to emerge in the central U.S. come Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of next week. And even before we get to that point, we'll see a small-scale system move across the northern plains. That first system moves across the Dakotas and Minnesota Monday and Tuesday. That brings another pretty good rain to corn and spring wheat areas. And then we'll see a heavy area of rain develop later next week. At this point, it looks like you could divide the Corn Belt in half with, say, Iowa, Missouri, and Minnesota, and points onto the west receiving a significant rainfall around Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of next week, and then areas to the east, including Illinois, more toward Friday and Saturday, so 8 to 9 days from now. How all of this works out exactly will take a little bit to determine, but unfortunately, we really won't have a great idea on that until about 3 or 4 days from now. But the point is, Todd, that we're going to see some pretty big rains next week.
Yeah, so next week, if farmers get into the field this week, they'll probably be okay, especially in the eastern Corn Belt. They've got more time maybe than the western Corn Belt to do that. And then if you think about the storm systems that are running through, will they continue? That sometimes becomes a persistent good thing or bad thing, depending on how much rain actually drops.
We've been in a pretty active pattern for a couple of months now, and it looks like that just is going to continue right into May. We don't have a lot of reason to believe that this pattern is suddenly going to stop, though as you noted, there are some areas out there that have missed out on the rains, and we could see a little bit of drying here over the next week in parts of the eastern Corn Belt. So it's not a real clear-cut situation. We can't just generalize everybody and say that, oh, this is a definite wet scenario that we're in or a definite dry scenario. The only thing we would comment on is that going forward, we again see that big system next week. We think another one will be right behind it. And if you just take a step back and just look at the whole big picture, there's been a lot of different rain events moving across the central U.S. for a while now. That looks to continue for at least 2 more weeks, more than likely into the first 10 days of May. So we will have to keep an eye on rainfall going forward.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you being with us for the day.
You're welcome, Todd. Talk to you next week.
That's Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.